just after 1 o'clock on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you on a Friday edition of Smith and Jones as we get you set for week two of the NFL postseason. A very busy sports weekend coming up overall, of course, with the National Hockey League back in action, the NBA in full swing about 3 weeks in roughly. And, of course, as I just mentioned, the National Football League postseason. Lots to talk about today over the course of the next hour. We're going to talk to Doug Smith from the Toronto Star in about 10 minutes' time or so. And then later on in the show, Emery Hunt, owner and founder of Football Game Plan, former NCAA player as well. He's joined us on the show many times. We love chatting the NFL with Emery Hunt as we will break down the Bills and the Ravens, the Chiefs and the Browns, and so much more. Jonesy, I'm not sure where you want to start today. We'll get into a bunch of things before we chat with Smitty. But the first thing I figured I'd hit you with is news out of Major League Baseball, the one sport not going right now of the four majors as we, you know, count down about, what, 4-6 weeks, less than that, until pitchers and catchers report. And the Toronto Blue Jays continue to be the bridesmaid thus far in the offseason. They've been rumored and rumbled and attached to every single major free agent out there, it seems. But thus far, they have yet to land a big fish as DJ LeMahieu heads back to New York. And the Jays, apparently, according to reports, were, second place yet again.
Tough for the Jays. You asked me where I wanted to start. If this were a regular NBA season, Eric, we would be looking forward to a big day on Monday, with it being Martin Luther King Day, that they'd celebrate the holiday on the third Monday of the month of January. All I know is his actual birthday is today, January 15th. And it's a day when, as I did for 22 years in education, I wore black that day, whether I was teaching phys ed or was in a classroom doing math or science or language arts or whatever. I wore black that day. And on occasion, people would say, "Oh, all black today. Why?" I would say, "Well, the Irish have St. Patrick's Day and everybody's supposed to wear green. I just wear black on this day because of Martin Luther King Jr." And I remember April 4th, 1968, the night of his assassination. It was a Thursday night, and I was with the junior choir, and my dad came to pick us up at the church, and we were, because it was Easter that weekend, we were practicing with the senior choir, and it was a late 8 o'clock practice that night. And I remember my dad coming to pick me up, and I mean, Eric, you know my dad. The guy's like, he's always got a smile on his face.
Yes.
I wish I would have inherited more of his qualities. He was I don't give a blank what you think. This is how I feel. And he says it got him into trouble, but he said he went down his way and he went down swinging. People used to say, "You're busy, Jones." He used to say, "Oh, man, I'm busier than a one-legged man in a ass kicking contest, but you know what? I'm the one kicking ass." And excuse my language, I usually don't go there. Somewhere he's saying profanity is a crutch for the uneducated.
I was just about to say it myself, Jonesy, because
Dad, you educated me better than that, but I remember him walking into the church that day with a very solemn countenance. And he turned to the adults as the kids were putting their coats on and whispered something. And it was the first time I was 9 years old. It was the first time I'd ever seen grown people cry. And that has always stayed with me. And I made it my, a priority to learn about Dr. King. You know, when we're in Atlanta, I'm always on a visit to the King Institute, and I'm out of the hotel. And today's the actual day. And that rings a chord with me from not even a sports perspective, but from a world perspective. And I just think he should be part of many of the educational curriculums around the world, with Kyle Lowry focusing on education reform. There are a lot of other things. You know, we talk about the Tulsa massacre and all these things, but from a bright light and a shining beacon, Dr. King is the one that should be talked about, especially with his nonviolent movement. He said, "If we were all an eye for an eye, we'd be blind." And he was against violence and that sort of, he was always into peaceful protests, and he got locked up and went to jail. But The man persevered. And here we are, at least for me, 60 years later, 60 years out from his, almost 60 years out. I think it was 64 he made the speech at the Lincoln Memorial. But here we are almost, 60 years out. And man, I ain't seen a lot of change yet, and we're still fighting for it. And I've said this to you many times, E, I feel the momentum is waning. A lot of talk. There was a lot of chatter, but I need to see action. I need to see things changing, and it's like turning an ocean liner, but I sure hope we've spun the wheel in the right direction.
Jonesy, you and I have had these conversations many times over the years. In fact, now that I think about it, perhaps even on Monday, something that could have been applied to today as you talk about, but maybe it's something that we play on Monday, where
yes.
Years ago we had a chance to sit down with Alex English, and we both, probably you more so than me, but we both have had conversations and interviews with him over the years on the subject of Dr. King and racism and race relations and whatnot. But I believe it was in New Orleans. And honestly, now off the top of my head, the date is escaping me, but I believe it's been 12, 13 years since I was able to do it. But I sat down with Alex English in his hotel room in New Orleans and had him recreate and redo the famous I Have a Dream speech. And it's become a bit of a tradition for me to post a link to it every year on MLK Day. And maybe it's something that we can incorporate into the show on Monday for those that haven't heard it before. And it's just something that, to me continues to resonate. And it's my little, my little piece of, recognition, I suppose, on a yearly basis. But it's something that I know we've talked about before where, and honestly, I'm not just saying this because you brought it up or not just saying it because of what's gone down the last 6 to 10 months, but we've talked about this before, Jonesy, many years before, because we're often broadcasting on MLK Day. Is why is it just one day, and why is it not recognized more? And further to that, why is it not recognized in Canada as well? We talk about people that have impacted the world on a global basis, not just somebody within the U.S., but somebody globally. That's something that we should be recognizing and honoring on this side of the border as well, let alone across the globe.
I agree 100%. And I think, to me, it brings all that's going on now epitomizes what he talked about. He talked about what he spoke about, what he was preaching about, and doing it nonviolently, doing it in a way that you just kind of, and this is something, and by the way, it is the third Monday. My crack research team has just texted into me to say it's the third Monday. He went about it the right way, with his nonviolent protests. And like I said, I was a kid sitting on, my parents' carpet, Mark and I, in the living room, watching the evening news at 6 o'clock, where, police chief in Alabama, Bull Connor, turned on the fire hose with the pressure that would strip the bark off a tree. And I'm asking, why is that happening? What did they do? Nothing. They went to sit at the counter for lunch. They took a drink from a water fountain. Like these are the kinds of things. And and he never fought back. He turned the other cheek and he went to jail and he came back out and he kept pointing his finger saying, that's not right. This isn't right. And as it was rightly said, he just held up a mirror to America, and some people in America didn't like what they see, the same way that news organizations did it with Ahmaud Arbery and George Floyd and Trayvon Martin and Breonna Taylor. And they just hold up the mirror, and some people don't like what they see, and it's up to them, to get after it and try to make changes. And I say this, I grew up in a different era, and I love the way the young people are boisterous and being, virulent now in protesting. And I'm at this late stage in my life, I'm finding my voice, and it's liberating. It's great, because for years you kind of sit there and you take it and you don't speak up, or you preach to the choir, you talk to the people that think like you do. And, if we're going to change the world, these are the kinds of things we got to do. I know I got political here, E, but that's what, I've been on chats with buddies, on my walk about Martin Luther King and the holiday and obviously the basketball coming up.
Well, and the Raptors will play on MLK Day on Monday, although it's an evening game, and they get set for their next game actually coming up tomorrow night against the Charlotte Hornets after beating the Hornets last night. We're going to get to that in just one moment, and I know Doug Smith is waiting. I'm going to just talk for 30 more seconds, Jonesy. Interesting that as you were speaking, and I was just kind of checking out the schedule for Monday's game, one of the things that popped up when I was, you know, just firing up the schedule for sports in general, let alone the NBA, on Monday, it will be exactly 1 month to the day on February 18th that the Boston Bruins will retire Willie O'Ree's number 22 jersey. And I saw something just a couple of days ago, and quite honestly, I meant to mention it to you on the show, and it's something we can get into later so we don't make Smitty, you know, hold even longer. But there's at least one person with the idea out there, and I don't know if the NHL would do this, but it's something they could do, something they should do, and something that, I'll tell you what, it shouldn't be about winning the press conference and winning the press release and just doing it for the sake of you know, the good vibes and the goodwill. You should be doing it from a genuine place. But if you want to win the press conference and win the public opinion award, how about, and again, this isn't my idea, this was a columnist on Yahoo Sports that floated this, at least that I saw it. How about as of this year, starting this year, much like Major League Baseball does with Jackie Robinson, and every player in the league wearing 42 to honor Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier in Major League Baseball, when Willie O'Ree's number 22 goes to the rafters at the Garden, you know, at the TD Garden in Boston on February 18th, what about every player in the National Hockey League wearing number 22 every year on February 18th?
I like it.
Anyway, we can talk about that a little bit later on in the show. Again, the Raptors getting set for their game tomorrow against the Charlotte Hornets, coming off their victory last night against the Charlotte Hornets. To talk about that and much more, from the Toronto Star, writer and author, national NBA writer, Doug Smith. Smitty, how are you today?
Hello, boys. I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing well, Doug. Doing well. Listen, maybe let's go to last night before we look ahead to tomorrow. Man, Doug, so far this year, we can talk about the play of a lot of guys on this team and you know, the ups and downs of the 3-8 start to the season, but I'd be hard-pressed to find too many bad things to say about Chris Boucher. He has been absolutely lights out.
Well, he's been outstanding. I think the biggest surprise to anybody who's watched him over the last 2.5 years is that he's doing it consistently. There have been flashes in each of the last 2 years where you go, holy crap, this guy's really good. And then it'll disappear for 4 games. He hasn't done that now. This year he's been good from start to finish. And I think that's the most heartening thing, is that maybe he's figured it out. And you're not going to have those significant dips. You know, he's not going to get you 20-10 every night. That's not in his skill set. And it's not going to happen. But the effort and the impact on games is there every night. And it hasn't always been that way. And I think that's the thing that surprised me the most about his first 11 games.
Smitty, and that's a great point to me. And I sense, with the confidence growing and knowing that he doesn't have to get in there and do something because he's going to be pulled out, he's becoming more comfortable with, at times, letting the game come to him and just kind of knowing that, all right, I got time here. I don't have to look over my shoulder for Serge or Mark. Or I know in two games, they're going to be back. And I wonder if he's part of, and I said this, we talked about this the other day. I wonder if he's part of this kind of relearning to win. Like, the Raptors have given up some games that we have expected them to win the way they have in the past. And they're kind of learning to win again because they've got different parts. And a guy like Chris Boucher, would you not throw him into that mix, Smitty, even though he's been with the team, but he hasn't always been on the court at winning time?
Oh, he's seldom been on the court in the last couple minutes of a close game. It was always two of Ibaka, Siakam, and Gasol. That was their best players. So two of those three had to play. Now he's one of those two or three best players, so he's got to play. And yeah, he's got to learn how to be more attentive to detail defensively down the stretch of close games. You know, T.J. Washington got open last night because he left him on the switch and on the screen. That was a bit of a mental blip, and you can't have those. And yeah, you got to learn that if you're going to be on the floor in a 3-point game with 9 seconds to go. And hopefully you keep learning it. And the next time it happens, tomorrow or Monday or Wednesday, you don't make that mistake. And that's the kind of incremental improvement we still got to see from them.
speaking with Doug Smith from the Toronto Star. Smitty, the one thing I've seen, and listen, you guys can both rein me in if I'm getting a little too over the top with this, but I've seen some signs, some visions, and I saw it last night on at least one occasion, if not two or three occasions, where the chemistry with Lowry specifically and Chris Boucher is getting better and better with every game that passes. And I saw little visions last night of the Ibaka-Lowry hookups with just the way that Kyle seemed to find Chris around the rim, even in traffic, just finding the ball into little, you know, tight little holes, making these passes where Chris was presenting himself, he was ready, and he was finishing in traffic. And it was kind of visions, like I say, of seeing Ibaka over the last couple of years.
I think Chris's hands in traffic are way better than they've ever been. And, yeah, Kyle knows now he's going to roll. He can throw that little pocket pass. He doesn't have to throw the ball up over the rim for Boucher to dunk it. He can throw the ball to his knees and let him pick it up and finish. And, yeah, that just comes with time. I can't – obviously, I don't have the numbers in front of me, and I really don't want to bother looking them up. But they wouldn't have run a lot of pick and rolls together in the last 2 years because it wasn't part of what the Raptors did. They didn't need to do it. Chris ran the floor. They didn't put him in a lot of screen roll stuff. Now they are, and I think you are seeing a little bit of familiarity there, 11 games into a season. It's going to get better as he goes along, playing more minutes, significant minutes, alongside Lowry.
Doug, I want to go back to the learning to win thing. Nick looks like he's settling on some pieces in a finishing unit, but there are parts of the game, although it comes down to the end, in the middle of, we saw it in Golden State, we saw it for sure in Portland and a bit last night, in the middle of the fourth quarter when you've got a lead and there's 4 or 5 minutes to go, that there just seems to be a hasty shot or a, yeah, why did you take that one? You're kind of going for the kill shot. And it's like when if you decided you were going to run your offense and grind it or on defense, rotate out and just challenge that shot and grab a rebound, you could – in essence, put your foot on their throat and not have it close at the end.
Well, I think, Jonesy, it's fair to say that second group that includes Johnson, Boucher, Watanabe, maybe Malachi, maybe another guy, three of those guys, they've had great first halves and horrible second halves. That run at the end of the first quarter to the middle of the second has been really, really good. And that run from the very end of the third to 5 minutes into the fourth has been very, very bad. And that's what they got to clean up. You know, that you can't call it a second unit because there's always two starters on the floor, but that group of backups has to be better in its second run together. And that's learning how to do it when the game is a little bit slower. And, you know, I think last night in the fourth quarter, they just fought too much. They didn't play. They fought. They got a bit befuddled by the zone because they missed some shots. So they started to think a little bit too much instead of just playing. And I think that's the next step for this team to get back into that top 5-6 in the East. And it's not an easy step, but they got to take it or they're going to be in that 7-8-9-10 group, and that'll be a disappointing season.
Speaking with Doug Smith from the Toronto Star. Smitty, speaking of that second unit and the rotation overall, Stanley Johnson seems to have settled into a significant role with the second unit, and he's played well. Malachi Flynn still spot minutes here and there, and I'm not here to get on the Malachi Flynn train. The minutes will come when they come for the youngster. But the one guy that I find a little bit perplexing at this point, actually two guys I'll throw at you. Matt Thomas seemed to be the darling coming out of training camp and was the guy that a lot of the coaches were talking about, and it took all of, what, three games, I think, for him to suddenly be languished to the bench. We haven't seen him now for X amount of games. And then I thought that Terrence Davis was playing really well over the last couple of ball games. And then he doesn't even see the floor last night. I'm not necessarily being critical of Nick. I'm just wondering where you think his mind is at right now as he tries to settle into what he's got, who he's got, and who he ultimately feels comfortable with going to within a 9, maybe 10-man rotation on a night-to-night basis.
Look, Nick, you guys know. Nick's never going to say this out loud. But if you parse his words and you listen to him closely, he's just not getting hard enough work from Terrence Davis and Matt Thomas. And he doesn't need their offense. Offense is not an issue with this team most nights. He needs them to work hard every minute they're on the floor, and he's getting that from Stanley Johnson and Yuta Watanabe. And he did not get it satisfactorily from Davis or Thomas. And that's why they're not playing. Now, it wouldn't surprise me to see Davis get in the game tomorrow night because the Hornets will surely play more zone, and he is a bit of a zone buster. But it's at the other end. It's attention to detail. It's work ethic, work rate. that if you listen to Nick from the fourth game on, those two guys specifically just did not work hard enough for him to trust them on the court. Whether they can make, you know, Matt Thomas is a gifted shooter, no question about it. And his ball handling has improved, and he's doing better decision-making offensively. But every time we've asked Nick about him, he said he's got to get it done better on the defensive end. And right now, they're getting it from Johnson and Watanabe. That may change. It'll be in 10 games, Stanley Johnson may be Stanley Johnson again, and Utah Watanabe will be a two-way player again. And maybe that's when Matt Thomas and Terrence Davis and maybe DeAndre Bembry, for all we know, will get a shot to play. But right now, they're just not giving it to him consistently on the defensive end with work rate. And that's what Nick wants, and he's not getting it, so they're not playing.
Smitty, I want to jump a little bit before we go to the greater part of the league in general. Man, a lot of postponements. The guy, I was listening to a radio station driving in to the game last night, and somebody said the Raptors-Suns game was canceled on Saturday. The first thing I thought of was Eric could stay home and watch the Bills.
Yeah,
but the guy had it wrong.
Man, you killed me. You killed me.
He had it wrong. It was the Pacers-Suns, I think. But, Smitty, I'm looking at all these postponements. Are these games going to be made up? Where are we going with that? And how close is the whole league teetering now to have this house of cards fall apart? I mean, in March, there was one positive test with Rudy Gobert, and boom, the whole thing got shut down. Now you got guys out at parties, and like there's like, okay, 6, 7, 8. Put Doug Smith in a uniform. You got 9. Get on the floor and play. Like where are we headed with this, Smitty?
Well, it was always going to be walking 30 tightropes, and they're hanging on precariously right now, and their feet are slipping off it. I think they'll get all the games in. They built in those days between that 5-day All-Star break. They didn't schedule a second half yet, and they could push that back 5 or 6 days if they had to, I presume, because you can jam stuff in if you have to jam stuff in. They've given themselves the cushion, but the cushion is running out. I think we're at 11 postponements now, and you can't have a whole lot more before you're really scrambling and teams are playing 5 days a week instead of 3. And then your whole mess at that point is you're playing too much, you're around too many other people, you're exposing yourself to the possibility of getting the virus because you're out about and around sweaty, spittle-distributing players. That's the long-term issue, the cumulative effect. But I think right now they've got enough time to get everything in and get finished when they got to get finished. But, again, it was a precarious situation when it started in December, and it's more precarious now, and they got to get a rein on it, or it's going to be a disaster by April.
Speaking with Doug Smith from the Toronto Star. Smitty, as we get set for the weekend for the Raptors' next game coming up tomorrow, I know we touched on it a little bit here, in regards to some of the adjustments that might be made. I was talking to who was I talking to, Jonesy? I can't even remember what guest it was. We've had so many folks on.
You're getting old, D.
Yeah, I know. Either that or I'm just, let's just go with that. I'm getting old. But we were talking about whether the Raptors at this point with their record kind of break the schedule down into little chunks. How do you think that the Raptors kind of take this right now, Smitty, knowing that, you know, by all accounts, and I think you've probably said as well, they're better than what their record indicates, but at the same time, the record is what it is. They're 3-8. How do you chop this up and say, we can't just get it all back at once? It's going to be a slow build. Are you looking at the 20-game mark, the 25-game mark? Are you looking at that All-Star break you speak of? What do you think this team does to just try and find its water level again?
A lot of coaches like break down the schedule in 5-game segments. Some do 10. And they say, okay, if we get 3 out of 5, these 15 will be okay. We'll get back into it. I really think this group just figures out what's next and goes on to what's next. And I think it helps a little bit that they're going to have a bunch of 2-game series coming up. They can say, okay, we sweep these, we're going to make a big jump over some teams. They get, you know, Charlotte and Miami and Indiana on those 2-game series in the next 9 days. And that's a pretty significant possibility to make a jump. But I don't think there's nearly any kind of panic or we need to make huge changes until you're this year, 20, 25 games into the season, because the way the East is bunched, you're not out of it at 3-8. You're not going to be out of it at 6-15. You know, you might be out of it at 5-20, but you know, at that point, I think that's when you make the big move if you're going to make a big move. But right now, you just play every night and see what happens.
You think there's a big move coming, Doug, for these guys?
I don't think there is. I don't know what's out there. I don't know. Obviously, they could use some help in the middle, but are you going to just sacrifice Norm Powell's existing contract for a guy who's going to play behind Chris Boucher? I don't know. I don't think there's a big deal out there. There might be. Maybe they eventually cut Alex Len adrift and find some other guy who'll come in and fill you 9 minutes a night at that center spot. But I don't think you want to sacrifice. I don't think there's a big move out there to be made right now. And I don't think you need to sacrifice assets at this point in the season.
Smitty, I was going to let you go, but you just brought up something that I want to ask about now. And I know it's just a theory, a thought of yours that you just floated there, the Alex Len, whether he's you know sent adrift at any point or not. But the center spot right now, to kind of maybe end where we finished, talking about Chris Boucher and throwing out in Alex Len and obviously now Aaron Baines. Baines back in the starting lineup last night, played 8 minutes, didn't look great, sat down, didn't see him the rest of the night. This was a significant signing for the Raptors, and by all accounts, by most experts, you know, one of the best available players at that position in the offseason, and it just hasn't been a great fit. How do you massage that, maneuver that, manage that in the coming games, the coming weeks, the coming months with a guy that you fully expect to get more out of, and he's just not producing and not fitting in right now?
I think offensively, you got to get him away from the basket. I think spacing issues are horrible when he's on the offensive end. You got to get him on the weak side setting screens for shooters as opposed to setting ball screens because he just clogs things up. Defensively, he's just got to get better. He's got to get more reactive. He's got to be able to get away from his guy and go be like Marc Gasol and protect the rim vertically. So he's not going to have to jump. He's just got to get his big body over there, but he's got to get it over there a split second faster. And maybe he will, maybe he won't, but I don't think there's any reason to give up on him right now. He's a solid NBA player who they need to play 10 minutes a night. And that's all they really need from him, frankly, because Boucher is going to play 30 or 35 minutes. There's no question about it. So you don't need Aaron Baines to be an all-star. You need him to be a 10, 12-minute-a-night guy who doesn't hurt you. And so far he's hurt them a little bit, but I think there are ways to move him around the court offensively and to speed him up defensively that will make him effective in the short stint they need him to be effective in.
Smitty, appreciate the time as always. We'll talk again real soon. Stay safe.
You got it, guys. Talk to you down the road.
All right, Smitty.
There is Doug Smith from the Toronto Star. Again, it's the Raptors and Hornets getting set for their second of two straight tomorrow night, and you can hear it right here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. When we come back, we shift our attention from the NBA to the National Football League, getting set for round two of the NFL postseason, and lots to chat about with Emery Hunt when he comes on the show next on Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Back on Smith & Jones, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. This has nothing to do with me. This has nothing to do with this show. This is creative license from the dudes behind the scenes trying to implant their own ideas into this. This is the unofficial show of the Buffalo Bills. All right, folks?
No.
The Bills finished 13-3.
Wrong.
The record doesn't, get wiped out at the end of the regular season. No.
And it doesn't count in the playoffs.
At the very least,
they're 1-0, just like the Browns.
Well, then hold on a second, Jonesy. I have not heard the shout song once this week. Not once.
No, that's because we heard it 7,000. That's because we heard it 7,000 times between June and now. So, yeah, it's fair.
Your team wasn't winning. They weren't better than the Bills. What do you want me to do? At the very least, the slate should be wiped clean, and it should be an even playing field in the postseason, even though I don't agree with your bogus take on, you know, it's the playoffs, it's the new season. We're both 1-0 right now. I don't want to be coming back from any more commercials listening to the Brownies or any of their songs. And now I got to start with the Browns because I can't shift from that to the Bills. And Emery Hunt's probably wondering what the hell's going on here, but he's joined us before, so he should know. I'm a Bills guy. Jonesy's a Browns guy. We'll start with the Browns because of the tune that was playing. And as we bring in Emery Hunt, owner and founder of Football Game Plan, former NCAA as well. Emery, do the Browns have any hope in hell of knocking off the Chiefs this weekend?
Yeah, they really do, man. And it's mainly because of how they play.
Uh-oh.
Football, you're talking about run game and defense. And while they're not the best defensively, they are opportunistic. And that's all you need. One or two turnovers along with that run game and what they have a shot. So it's going to be interesting to see. Plus, we know Kansas City tends to take off during the middle part of a game. They get bored and they allow teams to hang around. So we will see a tighter game than that 10-point spread indicates. I think this one will be one that's a one-possession game by the time the fourth quarter is over.
Emery, don't get my hopes up now, brother. I don't have me dancing on Friday night or Saturday night when the game's on Sunday. Is that the formula though, Emery? Like run the ball with Chubb and Hunt, and as we had Eric Metcalf on earlier, just try to keep that guy who slings it around better than anybody else in the NFL right now. Try to keep him off the field.
Yeah, that's the best defense is your own offense. And what I like about what the Browns do is that they understand who they are, and they are not going to shy away from that. When they tried to shy away from that, it was earlier in the season when they wanted to let Baker Mayfield throw the football all around the yard. That was a losing formula. Now they've won a lot of games. Why? Because they've been able to run the football. And in the playoffs, you want to dance the person you brought to the party. You want to play the hits. And right now it's their run game, play action pass, bootlegs with Baker Mayfield, chill the TOP and maximize drives with touchdowns. That's how you beat a team like Kansas City.
Speaking with Emery Hunt. Emery, let's just stay on that game for another minute or so here. When you talk about the fact that KC does go through these kind of lulls, what do you think it is? Like, is it bored by their own greatness? Bored by the competition? Lack of focus and attention to detail. Why does that happen to such a good team with such immense talent?
You know, I think it's a little bit of both. Sometimes you are so much better than your opponent, and you try new things, and you want to try to tinker with things, see if it works. Because, you know, at the end of the day, if we just go back to playing the hit, so to speak, we're going to score when we want to. And also, I think a little bit of it is because they can't truly run the football effectively, so they can't run their way out of a rut when they have those quick three and outs with the passing game. So I think that's a small issue that has been a problem for them all season long. But you're right. You see a team that, you know, maybe too good for their own good, if that makes sense, that just kind of goes through lulls. You see this with Tampa Bay as well. When you look on paper, Tampa Bay, like, you know, Mike Evans said, they are on paper the best team, best talent in the league. But you saw them throughout the course of games have those lulls where it just doesn't make sense. Like, how does the team that has Mike Evans, Antonio Brown, Chris Godwin, all those tight ends, Tom Brady, and the running back that's having a really good year, how does that offense not average 45 points a game? So it's just one of those things. And if Kansas City can find a run game in this matchup, it's going to help them out in that matchup, but also moving forward.
Emery, I'm glad that they played the Brownies songs this week because, like I said, as a fan, there's part of me that says, I'd love to see them do it, but like the Steelers last week, I'm not so sure it can happen. But with Eric's team, I think Baltimore's no slouch, and you got to keep Lamar Jackson off the field because I look at that guy and he's a halfback who can throw. He's a threat to throw because he can beat you with his legs. But I think Buffalo has a better chance of advancing than Cleveland does, and how good has the Bills' defense been, and how good do they have to be to shut down or try to at least curtail Lamar Jackson?
Well, they've been better over the course of the season, and especially the secondary, where they will fall into a problem in this game. You saw it last week against Indianapolis. It's the point of attack. And Baltimore can run the football better than anyone in the NFL, better than Indianapolis. And it helps when your quarterback is also your number one threat and is the best player on the field, any field he steps on, and that's Lamar Jackson. So, you know, when you look at that aspect, the Bills' defense will, one, have to be able to get off blocks and stop the run. And I think the biggest issue for them is not on their defensive side, but it's going to be on their offensive side, because the Ravens can apply pressure. They can stop what little bit of a run game the Bills have. And on the opposite side, on the outside, you look at the passing game with, you know, their receiving core now having to go up against Marlon Humphrey, outstanding press corner, arguably one of the top five corners in the league. Marcus Peters, press corner, guy that has ball skills. So it's going to be some tight windows that Josh Allen will have to take some risk and fit the football in. In conjunction with the fact that the Ravens can get pressure on the quarterback. So that defense in this game, I think, is the biggest matchup nightmare for Buffalo, more so than whether or not they're going to be able to stop the run.
Speaking with Emory Hunt, owner and founder of Football Game Plan, former college football player, works with CBS Sports as well. Emory, you just mentioned Josh Allen, and again, I'm a Bills guy, so I'm trying to take off my colors for a second here. When I factor in the injury to Zach Moss, and I know the Bills tried to address it with a little bit of depth, some signings during this this week in between, et cetera, but obviously a heap of attention will be on Devin Singletary, and he hasn't necessarily been great this year. Do you think we could see Josh Allen throwing the ball 50, 60 times in this game?
Not. I hope that means we're going to see Josh Allen become more of a run threat like we saw him do against Indianapolis. To me, that when that element was unleashed last week, it kind of broke the game open. The Colts didn't have an answer for, you know, Josh Allen taking off and running, and it kind of helped their run game have success. You saw Singletary sort of have some success because teams have now the Colts had to worry about Allen sneaking out the back door. That's going to be tougher against the Ravens because they have that type of quarterback, so they practice against that style all week long. But I do think they're going to have to find that good balance because you don't want to put him at risk of throwing the turnover. You know, you don't want Josh Allen throwing the ball 45 times a game or in this matchup. You want that number to be about 30 to 32 max, but you got to have at least 10 call run plays for Josh Allen to help balance out that offense. Again, he doesn't have to be Lamar Jackson. He has to be Josh Allen in that regard, but you want to make sure you give them something else to worry about, and that's Allen's ability to run the football.
Hey, Emory, I want to jump just quickly to the NFC. New Orleans just seems to have Tampa's number. What does Tampa have to do to try and win that game? I know that, you know, Tampa's got what they want with Brady, and you know, they've advanced and they're in it. But I look at the two games they played against New Orleans this year, and they've been close, but they've been just good enough to lose. What do they have to do to get over the hump?
Not turn the ball over. In, you know, the first matchup, they had the interception, the pick six. And then in the second matchup, it was just a cascade of turnovers that really got them blown out. So if they can't turn the ball, if they don't turn the ball over, it gives them a chance to stay in the fight against New Orleans. And New Orleans' defense is really good. So it's a really good matchup for them, good offense versus good defense. And for the Saints, it's going to have to be their offense trying to find ways to beat the blitz because we know Todd Bowles will send that pressure consistently. And the Saints don't really have true blitz beaters that really scare you as far as explosiveness down the field. They have a bunch of catch-and-run guys, a bunch of possession guys. So we'll see how they're able to supersede that pressure. But that's the biggest key. If Tampa can protect the football, it gives them a greater chance of getting over the hump this season. But New Orleans is the one team that has beaten, or they were the last team to beat the team three times in one season. They did it in 2017 when they swept the Panthers in the regular season and beat them in the playoffs.
Speaking with Emory Hunt. Emory, when we talked about the run game, well, both for the Browns and the Bills/Ravens, how much of a factor will the run game be for the Saints against the Bucs? For as all the time we talk about Drew Brees, and listen, he can unleash the cannon at any point. The run game of the Saints has clearly been incredible this year with Kamara as well. And how much could that be a big factor in trying to just control the clock and maybe break down the Buccaneers?
Well, the Saints' whole offense is about ball control. You know, with their ball control offense, you look at Michael Thomas on the perimeter, how they get Kamara in the passing game. We've seen them last week use Deontay Harris, the short slot guy. And so their whole offense is about ball control. But if they're able to run, that helps them out because it keeps a lot of pressure off Drew Brees. If you're able to put Drew Brees, you know, and it's weird to say this, but if you're able to put Drew Brees in a situation where he has to throw more than 25 times, I think at his age, that's the matchup you want. You want him throwing the football more because he doesn't have the arm to really push it downfield, nor do they have the vertical threats to get downfield.
Their running game with Alvin Kamara, how much will they lean on that? Emery, you were talking about that briefly, but how much will they lean on that?
I don't think they'll lean on it much. They don't really give him the football off, you know, a lot from a traditional tailback setting until they're closing out a game. So we'll see them utilize him like he's been utilized a lot all throughout the season. He'll by halftime, he'll probably have like 10 carries, you know, but he'll also have like 9 targets in the passing game or something like that. Right. So by the end of the game, he may have 17 carries, but also still have another 8 targets in the passing game. So I just think that he's just not – if they're going to run the ball, it's going to be because of you know, what we've seen from Latavius Murray and someone like that in conjunction with Alvin Kamara.
Speaking with Emery Hunt. Emery, just before I move over to the Rams and Packers, wanted to pass along to the folks as well in case they missed the news in the last hour or so that Bucs head coach Bruce Arians did say that Leonard Fournette is going to start against the Saints. Ronald Jones getting better but still considered a game-time decision with that quad injury. So, again, it's Leonard Fournette in the backfield for the Buccaneers this weekend. All right, we've got a couple of minutes left here. Rams and Packers. This is, to me, a real interesting one. Obviously, defense versus offense, I would assume, is the easy way to maybe put it. But the Rams have kind of been shaky to me. I don't know. Tell me if I'm wrong, just kind of the way that they've been up and down this year, and I know they battled the injury as well, but I keep waiting for the offense to show me a little bit more, even though the defense has been there. And for the Packers, man, Emery, every week I watch this, and this is a very basic layman's opinion or view of this. Every week I watch the Packers, I just think, how in the world do teams not just try and double up or throw major coverage at Adams every week and make Rodgers beat you with somebody else? It seems like Adams is open and open and open, and I just don't know how teams can't stop that or at least slow it down. And if there's one team that can or should, it's a defensive-minded team like the Rams. Am I wrong on that?
Well, you know, sometimes great players are just great players, you know.
Right.
And guys are going to do what they do. But in this matchup, it lends a little bit more credence to your point where they can trust Ramsey to slow down or essentially take away Devontae Adams. They're going to put a lot of pressure on everyone else to make plays. But we've seen them do a great job with Williams on the opposite corner, John Johnson the third at free safety, but Aaron Donald on the interior really forces you as a quarterback to make quick decisions. So the ball will come out quick, and the Rams rally up and make a tackle. And so unless they get Aaron Donald blocked up properly, it doesn't matter who's covering who on the back end, because that ball is going to come out quick, it's going to come out short, it's going to come out underneath, and they're just going to rally up and make plays.
Emery, how good is Green Bay's defense? I mean, I look at this game, and when I look at the 4 games this weekend, I thought, okay, biggest upset would be the Browns. But I look at the Rams, and I'm saying, man, they got their work cut out for them too. And I just see this game as one that could have both quarterbacks, weather notwithstanding, slinging this thing up and down the field. And there could even with the snow or the weather or the cold, the temperatures, there could be a lot of points. I'm just wondering if Green Bay's defense is up for the challenge, because Sean McVay can be very, very creative.
I think what happens with Green Bay's defense is, you know, obviously we look at defenses from front to back, but I think when you look at Green Bay, you have to look at them on the other side of it from back to front, because they have matchup players across the board in the secondary, guys that can match up, mirror wide receivers, and make plays on the ball. So I look at someone like Darnell Savage being a huge X factor in this game, because the Rams want to get outside in the run game. They're able to play well in the alley, is Green Bay's secondary, and make plays at or near the line of scrimmage, but also against those crossing routes that we see, those layered routes that forces you to communicate on the back end. The Packers seem to do a great job in passing guys off, jumping underneath coverage, robbing the middle of the field. They do a good job on that side of it, but their question will be whether or not they're able to pressure Jared Goff. If they can stop them from getting the edge in the run game and force, you know, that run game to go back inside, I think that's their best bet. But as far as them, you know, playing well in the secondary, that's the matchup I think favors Green Bay, as opposed to it would usually do when you're facing a team like Los Angeles.
Emery, we appreciate the time as always, man. Thanks for doing this today. Enjoy the games this weekend. Stay safe, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Emery.
Emory Hunt, the owner and founder of Football Game Plan, former NCAA running back as well. You can see some of his work as well on CBS Sports. And Jonesy, I'm jacked up and I'm ready. I really wish the game wasn't up against the Raptor game, but you know, I'll be keeping at least a part of one of my eyes on the Bills tomorrow night as we get set to bring you the Hornets and the Raptors tomorrow night right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
I know how you feel. I had one eye on the Brownies game last week, but who you got this weekend? Who you got?
All right,
I got Green Bay.
The Bills, the Chiefs, the Packers, and the Bucks.
Wow.
Yeah.
Although I agree with you, I got the Packers, the Bucks. I got the Bills. I think it's going to be a kind of a ooh-ah, like you're going to be – I got to watch you on Saturday night that you're not like looking at a Bills play and then looking at the Raptor game and like – cursing or expressing some emotion to something that was nondescript in the Raptor game because something just happened
like
in the Bills game
during the Raptors Nets game.
all right, you can tell that story. I won't. And my heart says going with the Brownies, but I don't think they can do it. I'd love to see them do it. They would be knocking off the best team, in my opinion, the best team in football, which would be great. I'm not sure they can do it, but all I know is the Steelers aren't playing, so that's a good thing.
All right, we'll take the break and come back, get set to wrap things up on Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith & Jones, getting set to wrap things up. Writer's block coming up in about 5 minutes' time, and then that's Tim and Sid. And then we're into the weekend, Jonesy, as we get set for a full slate of National Football League playoff action. Of course, the Toronto Raptors on the court as well tomorrow night right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and the Maple Leafs and the National Hockey League in full swing as well with the season now a couple of days in. I'll leave it with this. On Monday, Martin Luther King Day in the States, we'll talk more about Dr. King, Jonesy, as we did to start the show today, but I want to get into more the story or the idea of Willie O'Ree and maybe the National Hockey League honoring his number 22, much like baseball does with Jackie Robinson.
I like it. Great idea. Great idea. And like I said, we've talked about it. Martin Luther King Day should be a North American holiday, not just one in the States.
Thanks to Emory Hunt for joining us today. Doug Smith as well. Again, Writer's Block comes next. It's been Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.